From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter in Dallas. And joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Konnichiwa, everybody.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Today we're going into weeb territory. It's weeb time. We're doing some anime. Actually, we did anime-ish recently, so it's not that unusual. We did Lupin the Third, so it's not that unusual. But John, before we do this, I watched one of your favorite movies tonight.
Okay.
One of your all-time favorites. Yeah, you know, I decided to do the meme, and I decided to put on Sweet Liberty by Alan Alda. Just a...
exactly.
Yes, but, just... it's a film about...
I've never seen it.
So. Oh, it's terrible. Oh, man. I'm going to watch... Because I remember you making fun of that movie years ago, before you were on the show. And I just saw it, and I went, I'm going to do the meme. I'm going to watch Sweet Liberty. And my wife likes Alan Alda, so I went, let's watch this. And I put it on, and I think we bailed at about 50 minutes. 45
Jeez.
Minutes.
Yeah. Oh, that good, huh?
Well, here's the thing is I looked at the premise, and the premise is legitimately a funny idea for a movie. It's about a historian whose book is being made into a movie, and it's getting mangled by Hollywood. And so...
Right.
Funny idea for a movie. The problem is that it is full of the worst sub-Woody Allen, sub-sitcom banter dialogue. There are these scenes between Alan Alda and his girlfriend that they feel like the kind of crap amateur actors come up with at, like, improv workshops, where he's, like, they're having a fight in the bedroom, and he's putting on her robe, and...
Oh, God, it's like improv comedy.
It was terrible. And there's this...
Like, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Isn't that the show where they just give them ideas and they improv with it?
Yeah, which was a show I always found to be completely unwatchable, but it was really popular.
Yeah, I couldn't get into it. People loved it, because I think because I just like Drew Carey.
Yeah.
I think it's because it's funny.
Yeah, I remember trying to watch it and just staring at it and not laughing, but...
Am I dreaming, but was Drew Carey sort of like a viewing standard at one point that's been memory-holed?
I think so. I think part of the reason... He had his sitcom, right? The Drew Carey
show?
Yeah,
I used to watch it. I used to watch it a lot.
Yeah, it was funny. And, you know, if you look at that cast, they look like a 90s ska punk band, you know?
Yeah, right. Yes, the Heptones.
Yeah.
The Drew tones.
It's the might, the mighty, mighty Drew tones, you know.
Pick it up.
But, you know, Drew had Whose Line Is It Anyway? But I think a couple things happened. One is he lost weight.
Right.
So he looks different. I remember seeing
so
him
he's
in.
Not funny.
Well.
He looks like Charles Whitman having aged.
Yeah. Well. He doesn't look like Drew Carey anymore. You know, he had a look that was him.
Yeah.
Like, kind of chubby guy, crew cut, horn rim glasses.
Yeah, you couldn't imagine Dom DeLuise working again if he slimmed down.
Yeah, and then I saw him in the Aristocrats documentary, and he was skinny, and he just looked different. And I was going, that's not Drew Carey. Who is that? You know? And so, and he's just given this interview, and I remember thinking, wow, he looks completely different, you know. And so, but, you know, he hosts game shows now. He hosts Prize is Right. And, you know, game shows are popular. I'm sure it's a great gig. It makes you a lot of money, but I think it renders you completely irrelevant culturally at this point, you know.
It's a different audience because it's like old ladies and, you know, housewives who are rare. You know, homemakers, that type. It's that type of audience.
Yeah.
Retired homemakers. And that's not as common. It's a different market than the Drew Carey show.
Yeah.
It's like a sitcom young people watch.
Yeah. He just hasn't stuck around because he's gone off to the game show land. And I'm sure it's a great gig, and I'm sure it pays the bills, and I'm sure Drew is doing fine. But it just means that you know, his brand hasn't had any staying power, I guess.
Right. Because that was like the 90s, you know, if you have your standard sitcoms of each decade and, you know, like you have Sanford and Son and for the 70s, that kind of timeless sitcom and probably for some people MASH. The 80s, I guess you'd have the Cosby Show, but that's a curse. Or you'd have Friends, and then Drew Carey Show seemed to be right after Friends as that sitcom. You were going to see it in syndication every day on,
yeah,
you know, at 6:30 p.m. or whatever after the local news. Because I watched it a lot when it was on, and when I lived in Boston back in 99, 2000, it was on every night as a syndicated thing. So that's when I watched it most of the time.
Yeah. Speaking of those sitcoms, do you think Frasier has had any staying power in the culture?
You know, I've never seen an episode of Frasier in my life.
Oh, it's good. I remember it.
Yeah,
being
I mean, well, it's like I burned out on Cheers. I think first couple of years, I watched it when I was a kid. I watched Cheers and got tired of it. I got tired of the whole Thursday night sitcom thing and burned out on it and decided that stuff wasn't funny anymore. And, you know, I just wanted to watch weird shit, and foreign films and all that.
I wanted
that.
To watch Adult Swim.
Yeah, well, I kind of had that Adult Swim taste years before Adult Swim existed. You know, it's like, well, it's like, okay, at the same time, Nick at Night started showing SCTV, which I always loved, like back when it was first run on NBC. And they would also show reruns of Fernwood Tonight, which I had never seen before. And I was amazed by. So I had no reason to watch what was on the networks. Like suddenly my humor was with these old shows that were really, they were considered weird at the time or surrealistic at the time. So it's like, I was going along those lines. I didn't find the haha sitcom, you know, I'm going to the store. What are you getting? I don't know. I forgot my list or, you know, they just a type of really bad banter that was passing for sitcom humor on network TV. So I never watched Frasier. And,
you have to wait around while people laugh. You know,
like, right. It's like the I don't think I ever watched the Kirstie Alley phase of Cheers. I think I only saw it with Shelley Long. So it's like I didn't want to watch those sitcoms anymore. I couldn't stand it. I hated the laugh track. I never got into Seinfeld that much. Like I'd watch it every now and then. I think Kramer was funny, but I didn't care for the filmed format where it was filmed like a movie, but it had a laugh track that was just weird to me.
Yeah, I liked Seinfeld a lot when I was a kid, but no, I think the same thing happened to me where I decided sitcoms were weird or foreign, I just didn't identify with them anymore, and so I stopped watching them. But I watched them a lot when I was a kid.
Right. When I was a kid, I watched them all. I still watch Sanford and Son. I'll still watch certain ones that I still find very funny, but most of them I can't stomach them. I can't get into it. But I like Drew Carey. I did get into Drew Carey when I was able to watch that at my leisure every day. And it's just weird to me that seemed to be on its way to being the next Andy Griffith or Gomer Pyle type thing where it would always be on in every city, you know, no matter where you were, and boom, it just cut off at the knees.
I wonder how long did that 9 seasons Drew Carey Show.
Yeah. It's buried on that. You know, we have all these digital channels on antenna that, like, just show old stuff, and it's an exclusive on one of those comedy channels that's on digital antenna.
Yeah, I'm looking on Just Watch.
I think that kind of seized it. I think that's what did it.
Yeah, because I don't see it streaming anywhere.
Right, it's not streaming. I don't think it's on DVD. I think it's just kind of buried on this syndicated antenna channel.
Man, the cast on this on the show was great. You got Dietrich Bader. That guy's hilarious.
Yeah,
you've got what's his name, Craig Ferguson. There's somebody else I saw. Oh, John Carroll Lynch. I like him a lot. Yeah. He's really funny.
It was like this talented cast with a lot of chemistry, and the writing was funny, and it wasn't trying to be important. They didn't have any issue. You know, there were no episodes that I recall where, oh, somebody's coming out and it's important. You know, just to try to get them in cover on Entertainment Weekly or something like that.
We got to make a statement.
Yeah. This has meaning, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who watches reruns of Ellen?
No. But that's a great point. That show's completely gone. It was totally replaced by her talk show.
Her talk show. Yeah. Never syndicated. There's no market for that shit.
No, she was never syndicated. And you know, she's kind of getting frog marched out the door right now. You know, she's
yes,
kind of,
exactly.
They're kind of allowing her to leave, I think. I think they're kind of soft canceling her. She's not getting, like, nobody's canceling her. But it seems like she's getting pressure from behind the scenes to pack it in
she's,
and go
she's
away.
She's getting a Fabian socialism vaporization from from the culture. So there's some sort of weird thing I've never seen before where they're gradually making her disappear.
Yeah, it's really weird. She's like Marty McFly in the picture on
Back to the
Future.
Yeah, she's fading. It's a paradox, you know. All these people who find her obnoxious just or cruel or bullying are just coming out of the woodwork. And
I've heard
she's vaporizing.
And people like Adam Carolla has talked for years about what a cruel psycho she is. And he's been like, oh, everybody hates her. Everybody knows she's nuts. And then but it's like the Harvey stuff. Like, I've heard stories that Harvey's a creepy perv for years. But it's just once we've decided you're no longer useful, then it comes the chickens come home to roost.
You're sacrificed to Moloch, but this is like this weird gradual. Okay, say goodbye to her because we're getting rid of her.
Yeah,
she ain't coming back.
Yeah, they're kind of allowing her to just go away on her own. Speaking of Carolla, he would always cite Drew Carey as a guy who's not funny but showed up to work every day.
Have a point.
Drew Carey's proof that anybody can do it.
Right, because everybody would always tell me they didn't think he was funny. They just thought all the supporting cast was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Diedrich and the other guy.
Yeah.
You know, those two were the comedy team. That was really that people were tuning in for. That was the Abbott and Costello of the show.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just funny. Like, Carolla was like, what's a Drew Carey joke you remember? For some reason, that was a thing for him for a while, was crapping on Drew Carey.
Well, that's like Norm MacDonald saying, Steve Allen claims he's written 1,000 songs. Name one.
That's a very Norm joke.
Yes.
Name one.
Yeah, name one.
Steve Allen claims he's written 1,000 songs.
Yeah. Name one. It's just like, it's perfect.
All right. So, yeah. Anyway, but long story short, I watched Sweet Liberty. It's terrible. Don't watch it.
And avoid it and stay away from it.
Yeah. You are wise to have avoided it and crapped on it without having seen it.
I'm not an Alan Alda fan.
I know.
I do the one word impression, but it's like I'm not a fan.
Well, it's quite bad. Anyway, so the show we're actually doing, started off a show on an anime talking about Drew Carey and sitcoms.
That's us, though.
Yeah, it is. Our audience expects it. If you're tuning in for the first time, just expect it. You know, it's good.
Yeah.
Just go along for the ride. It's Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. No, we are doing Berserk, the Golden Age arc, The Egg of the King. So part one of this trilogy of movies. And the reason I wanted to do it was the creator of the manga and the creator of Berserk, Kentaro Miura, died unexpectedly a couple weeks ago. Of an aortic dissection, an acute aortic dissection. He was 54 years old.
Is that a fancy way of saying he had a heart attack at a young age?
Let me see. It occurs when an injury to the innermost layer of the aorta allows blood to flow between the layers of the aortic wall, forcing the layers apart. In most cases, it is associated with the onset of sudden severe chest or back pain, described as tearing in character.
Was he taking like a kendo class or something?
Maybe. I know.
Never knew about.
My dad had a friend who was Japanese who dropped dead from something like that during a kendo match.
Really?
Yeah.
What a coincidence. Yeah.
But Miura was not. He didn't look like he was in. There's the picture of him on his Wikipedia page is very unflattering. But he was I saw more recent pictures of him. He didn't look unhealthy. Or overweight or anything like that.
Well, there are some of these. Sometimes you'll meet these skinny guys who seem healthy, and maybe they play racquetball or something. But they'll say, "Oh yeah, I had like 3 heart surgeries when I was 22."
Yeah,
you know, it's just weird stuff. It's like,
right.
Well, you never know.
But
not everybody's born with that good ticker.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, sometimes it's just genetic, you know. But and what sucks is that the manga was unfinished. It had not reached a conclusion. He started it in 1988, so it'd been going for a while.
Jeez.
But what I liked about Berserk, I got into it when I saw the anime series from 1997. A friend of mine introduced it to me, and, you know, it would come out on a DVD. It was back in the day when you'd go to Suncoast Video, and you'd spend
a giant anime section that's bigger than any other section of the store.
Yeah, it was huge, and everything was wildly overpriced. You'd buy a disc with, like, four episodes for, like, $30. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But
it was a money grubbing scene.
That was
probably one reason I never got into it.
Yeah. It was an expensive fandom to get into anime.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore, but back in the late 90s, early 2000s, ugh, it's bad.
Now streaming, you can get a subscription to goddamn Crunchyroll for ad free Crunchyroll and have access to so many damn shows. You never have time for them.
But I got into the other series, which has, I think, the same dub cast as this film does. But
okay, now what's on HBO Max? I noticed there's a Berserk on HBO Max. What is that?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I will look that up as we talk. But Berserk, I got into it because of that show, and the show covers the same material from the comics as this trilogy of movies does. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more story to it. But what I liked about it, though, is it wasn't like typical anime or manga content. It seemed more Western. Like, it seemed like it had a lot of Western influence, like Conan fantasy type stuff. Okay, so the Berserk on HBO Max is the series that followed up these movies.
2016, that series.
Yes.
2017. Okay.
Yes, and this series is pretty controversial because it uses an animation style where it's all 3D, but it's made to look 2D, and you get a real uncanny valley thing with it that is makes it kind of hard to get used to watching. Once you get used to it, though, it's interesting because the story is. It's cool to see where the story continues because the show changes wildly, you know, once it goes into this territory. But I haven't seen it all, to be honest. I've only seen I've seen like half of the first season, and there's two seasons, and that covers the next two big story arcs. But anyway,
is it recommended?
Would I recommend it?
Yeah.
I would if you like this, if you liked the movies, I think you'll like the story, but I say that with a big caveat. I hate the animation. But
okay,
would you
think one is better off reading the manga and getting these gigantic editions?
The manga is far better, yes.
Yeah, because you've been messaging me these pics of your leather-bound, you know, human blood-stained editions of Berserk or whatever, and... And it's like in these incredible, like, what do you call them? Two-page spreads or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
the big splash,
splash page.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's crazy stuff. Like it looks like you know, looks better than your typical like Jack Kirby type thing from the 60s.
Yeah,
it's spectacular.
Yeah, the artwork that Miura did for it is incredibly detailed. It's also very R-rated. Like, you know, they're wrapped in plastic if you get them at the store because they're just so much violence and nudity and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, and the horror in it, I would say there is a big Robert E. Howard influence, but there's also a big Lovecraft influence because there is a lot of cosmic horror, a lot of weird horror and like stuff like that that comes to bear later. But you hadn't had any experience with this, John, had you?
No, I never. I only heard of it. I think you mentioned it like maybe 2 years ago or something, and I had never heard of it because I don't follow anime and just really don't follow that division of entertainment because first of all, it's overtly complex. If you're trying to get into something like Gundam, good luck.
Yeah.
You don't know where to start. Yeah. It's crazy. And the fans are not the friendliest about allowing in newcomers and stuff. It's like, it's a scene I kind of despise for the way it's marketed. And I don't like a lot of, as a kid in the 70s, I loved Speed Racer. And I liked some of the Go Nagai cartoons that came over here dubbed in English with the robots and stuff. I thought they were great. Sort of pre-Transformers type of fun. Pre-Voltron, in fact, but I didn't watch Robotech or anything like that. And
you've been getting into
suddenly
that lately,
this stuff,
haven't you?
I have. I've been watching on the Roku channel. I'm enjoying it because it's away from all the fandom and the craziness of it or whatever. I think Robotech's kind of forgotten how popular that was in the 80s. It probably kicked off the whole anime thing in this country. I like Golgo 13, The Professional. I thought that was a pretty good movie. Didn't like the follow-up film and didn't care for the series, which was actually more faithful to the manga. But it was almost like Gundam looked interesting, but I didn't know where to start because there were like a million Gundam titles.
They were expensive
as well. They were not cheap to get into.
I'm a big Gundam fan. I can help you with where to start with that.
Good. We'll take some notes after the show.
Yeah. But just if anybody's listening out there who wants to know where to start with the Mobile Suit Gundam movie trilogy. Easy. You know, just do that. Okay. Mobile Suit Gundam movie trilogy. It takes the entire plot of the original TV show and condenses it into three very good tight movies that are very good to watch. Really well paced.
Is that on streaming?
Good question. I will find out.
There's the
kicker.
This stuff is so scattered on streaming and what you have to buy DVDs of or hunt for DVDs in thrift stores or whatever the hell you're doing. You know, it's just it's crazy.
Mobile Suit Gundam, the original series, which, you know, that is also a good place to start. It is streaming on Funimation and Crunchyroll.
Okay.
That original series is very good. I'm having trouble finding the movies, but it looks like they might be streaming on those same platforms.
Okay.
And if you like that, go on to Zeta Gundam. And that plot line, those have series that follow them up. It's pretty easy to go from there. But then you have stuff like Gundam Seed, Gundam Wing. Those are kind of self-contained things. Gundam X, G Gundam is fun because it like combines martial arts movies and giant robots. I think you'll really like
one.
Yeah, I
probably will like that.
That one's on Crunchyroll. G Gundam, that's a fun one. You can watch that
one
with knowledge.
You know, I'm gonna cancel some streaming services and I'll probably just get a Crunchyroll.
I've been thinking about it
for the summer or something.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I'm scrolling through Gundam stuff. There's some Gundam movies I haven't heard of yet that look awesome. I'm like, I'd like to watch that.
Yeah, it's like, because even streaming access, just a little easier. I mean, like, okay, watching Robotech, it's on the Roku channel, which means you got some ads, but it's not that bad. You know, it's not like some of these streaming services that you can watch it with ads or you can pay for ad-free. But when you watch it with ads, the ads are like every 3 minutes, like Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
It drives you nuts. So they kind of like are pushing for you to subscribe. Whereas Roku, you get one ad at the beginning, one ad at the end, and it's okay. You know, it doesn't drive you nuts.
Yeah, they kind of punish you to get a subscription. So did you watch just the first movie or did you watch all three?
I just watched the first movie yesterday.
Okay.
Did not want to. I didn't want to go full bore into it because, you know, as I've said with manga, it's like, it's probably best taken a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
With any of this stuff.
I think that's wise. One thing about Berserk. Okay. So this movie, the Golden Age arc, part one, The Egg of the King, it follows two characters, Guts, who is a kind of a lone wolf type, the sort of kind of warrior you'd find in a Robert E. Howard story or something like that.
Yeah, he's like Conan or something, or Cull or one of these type of characters.
And he's very headstrong. All he wants to do is swing his sword, and he has a sword that is humongous too. and if you want to know why in like anime and video games like Final Fantasy VII, the hero has a big sword, it's because of Berserk. You can thank this.
Ah.
But he acts as a mercenary, but we see early on that he doesn't really have any loyalty. He doesn't care who he's fighting for. He just wants to like crush people's heads, you know, with his sword. And he catches the eye of a charismatic man named Griffith, who is the leader of a group called the Band of the Hawk. Griffith is extremely ambitious, and he sees Guts, and he basically challenges him to battle, saying, if I defeat you, you have to work for me. Griffith defeats Guts. Guts starts to work for Griffith, and the two form a friendship. And it's a friendship that, when it disintegrates, has huge consequences, which you kind of start to see in this movie. But in the film, we kind of see that Griffith is extremely ambitious. He's fighting for the Kingdom of Midland in a war against a kingdom called Tudor, which sounds like Tudor, like Henry VIII or something. And he wants to, he has ambitions to climb up into the ranks of the nobility, and he's seeing any angle he can do to ingratiate himself with that, and kind of sees everybody as a stepping stone. And
now the ironic thing about that character is he's more like a Michael Moorcock type character, like Elric or Hawk.
He is. Yes. There is a Moorcock influence here as well, I think.
Yeah.
Especially because this is much darker fantasy than, say, like Lord of the Rings. It's
right.
Very brutal. The world is extremely merciless and unforgiving. Life, people get killed like, you know, flies.
It's not like the Terry Brooks elf shit or whatever. It's not Tolkien at all. It's very Robert E. Howard or Michael Moorcock, very dark, bloody, like Carl Edward Wagner and, you know, some of the other writers who specialize in that kind of just blood-drenched, dark fantasy that isn't really published in mass market editions anymore. Like, it used to be a respected paperback genre in the early 80s, and you couldn't find it by, like, the 1990s. Everything was just elves and, you know, Tolkien knockoffs of orcs and other things.
And something that's kind of Lovecraftian is Griffith has this thing around his neck. It's called a balet.
Yeah.
And it looks like a red egg, and it has eyes, nose, and a mouth, but they're like Picasso'd out. They're all rearranged. And it kind of like the eye will kind of open up and look at you. But it's called the Egg of the King. And, you know, somebody, basically Griffith is like, oh, an old lady gave it to me and said the person who wears it will rule the world one day. And so that's one of the big things in the film is this
it's like Stormbringer.
It kind of is a little bit.
It's like the jewel in Hawkmoon's forehead.
No, there is a big Elric thing. Because, you know, Elric's kind of a bad guy.
Yeah, he's an anti-hero.
Griffith...
Moorcock based him on Zenith the Albino, who was a villain in Sexton Blake stories.
I did not know that.
Yeah, how you get that for your weird trivia?
That is some weird trivia.
The top of my head.
But it's funny, you know, how these things happen because, you know, The Witcher's obviously hugely inspired by Elric, even though the author denies it. He's a liar.
Yeah. Well, Razor Fist, I'm sure, has 20 different videos.
Yeah, he's got 20. And Razor Fist, I think, is a little too gung-ho about it. I think it's just...
Yeah.
It's not the whole plot. It's just the look of the character. That's it.
Well, Moorcock stole Elric from Sexton Blake stories, Zenith the Albino. So who cares?
Exactly. Jeez. I mean, people steal from other people. I don't see why it's not outright plagiarism, you know. It's just
Tarzan is stolen from Mowgli.
Yes.
It's just the way it's done. It's
you take stuff
Tarantino's
you like.
Tarantino's not new at this. It's just like he's not the new kid on the block for this sort of thing.
Well, the people who get super worked up about stuff like that, they're just trying to get one over on people they don't like on the internet who like something they don't like, you know? So,
right, exactly.
But yeah, Griffith is also kind of a, you know, he and Guts are kind of two main characters. But Griffith is, you know, he has his defenders which baffles me, especially as you get further in, that people could defend him. But he has his fans that think of him as a character who's he just knows what he wants.
Yeah, he's like this fey, ambitious, you know, vaguely gay, you know, strange character.
Yes.
It's very weird. It's like the whole vibe is really, really strange.
Yeah, and you see the homosexual angle come in the second film, although more like Griffith was willing to advance himself in that way. But we also see that he has he likes females too. But you see that.
So he's AC/DC is what you're saying.
Yes, I think so. Something like that. I think he desires power and he doesn't care how he gets it. I think that's.
Yeah, it's already strongly implied in this movie, this kickoff movie that he's AC/DC.
But
yeah,
you can
read between the lines.
But I don't think Guts and Griffith have an AC/DC relationship. I think that's purely a friendship. But although Griffith stares at him like he stares at an object he wants for his, you know, like a sword or something. There's also a woman in his band named Casca who he clashes with, that Guts clashes with, that they have kind of a love-hate relationship, mostly hate, but of course, you know it's going to become love, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, it's pretty blatant.
There's also some interesting, there's the Band of the Hawk has its like rogues gallery, one of whom is played by Sean Schemmel, who people will know as the dub voice for Goku on Dragon Ball Z. The character Gaston. But there's also, you also see some horror elements creep in here. With Nosferatu Zod, this monster they fight, the guy with the big horns in the dungeon.
You know? Yeah, it was kind of like the Balrog in Lord of the Rings, of all things.
Like, he's this big hulking guy who's like slaughtering men en masse, but then when he comes across Guts and Griffith, he turns into a giant demon. You know, it's very anime.
Right.
This isn't even my final form, bro.
Yeah. they went for like a 3D, it's like for the big action stuff, they go into like 3D animation.
Yeah. And that is one reason Eric is not here is that he was like, I can't look at that, you know, but so
get into his eyes, his Cuban eyes.
Yeah.
Couldn't take.
Yeah. But the big battle scenes, they use this 3D, 2D style of animation. I think Studio 4 Degrees Celsius produced this, and I think this is their thing. The guy who founded that studio, he came up with like this CGI animation software. Miyazaki used it in Princess Mononoke. The monster, you know, at the beginning, that monster attacks the village, and the hero kills the monster, but it marks him. The monster had these like weird tentacle like. Sort of, it was like a creature that had this tentacly morass, like infection on it. And they used that software to animate that creature. And he came, the guy who founded Studio 40 Degrees Celsius, he's actually a Western guy, Michael Arias. Mm-hmm. He's not Japanese. He might not have founded it, but he was one of the head guys there, I think.
Right.
The main two guys there I'm seeing on the side are Japanese, but Michael Arias was one of the big guys there. And he developed that. He's directed anime films. Like, he did one called Tekken Kinkreet in 2006. That was pretty well regarded. So they use this 3D, 2D look, and in the battle scenes only in this movie. Everything else is standard hand-drawn look. But the problem with the anime series that follows is it's all 3D, and it's pretty tough. But
That sounds like an eyesore. Well, okay, I noticed like during some sword fights that Guts looked like he was rotoscoped.
Yeah, yeah.
He had I was wondering, did they rotoscope in this thing? Because that type of movement you only get from rotoscoping, unless they figured it out on computer.
They might have mo-capped him. had an actor in a mocap suit, and then they CGI over it.
Yeah, that's definitely what it looked like.
But then there's 2D animation for everything else. But what did you think of that? Was that too tough to watch?
It wasn't a deal breaker, but I didn't particularly care for it. And same. It might be because I come from the background of watching, you know, Grandizer or Devilman or whatever, and you know, that's just what the way I prefer it, or Golgo 13. But it took a little getting used to.
Same here. That. If the whole movie was like that, it'd be tough.
I couldn't handle it.
The Berserk TV show that follows this up is all CGI. It's not all, but it's the vast majority is CGI, and it's tough to watch. But you know, you're only watching it for 20 minutes at a time. You kind of get used to it. And I was, you know, invested enough in some of what was going on to keep watching. But I got to tell you though, it is hardest in this movie. The following two, it's not so much. I thought
they ran out of money.
there's a lot more hand drawn. It's not as the CGI isn't as prevalent. It's still there, but it's used more sparingly in the next two films. What were some thoughts you had on it, John? You know, did you enjoy it? You know, you said it reminded you of some of the stuff you liked.
I tried watching Game of Thrones. I think I got through the first season, and I did not like it. And I didn't understand why everybody was going nuts for it and all that. And of course, naturally, when something like that is a hit on cable or whatever, everybody's like, wow, if only we could get a streaming show of Conan. If only we get a streaming show of Cull, or, you know, a Robert E. Howard character, or Michael Moorcock's characters for streaming, and or Fritz Leiber, or whoever, you know, who's written a really cool sword and sorcery series that's never had a really worthwhile movie version or in any medium, really. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, well, geez, maybe if you got the rights of the Howard stuff or some of these other writers to these anime companies, maybe they could actually do something more on the level of the writing than what Hollywood can do. Because it's just like, you don't have a limited budget for the visual. Right. So you can capture, like, if you read a Robert E. Howard story, like Conan or Solomon Kane or whatever, it is set in that Lovecraftian world where some creature could just pop out of the ground and kill any of these characters at any time. You know, it's just kind of that sense of doom is in the stories, and which may be related to Howard's mental state at the time. You know, he did check out pretty early in life.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, if they, it's like they don't, I, all right, I'll do a rewind to like the 90s when some pseudo intellectual zine editors who really love science fiction movies were getting into anime. 'Cause they said that, you know, science fiction in the 90s was kind of it was in the doghouse for whatever reason. And as far as movies go, because it was seen as Star Trek on TV, and Japanese anime was seen as this medium where you could still take science fiction seriously and be very imaginative with it and not be limited by the storytelling standards of Hollywood, which are very, hey, can this be more like Star Wars?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, with this, I see the possibility of doing something like King Cull or Brad McMorn, and not have to, hey, can it be more like Schwarzenegger? Can it be more like, you know, the Jason Momoa?
Why doesn't this have jokes? Avengers has jokes. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't this have jokes?
Why don't you have a cute assistant? Why doesn't, we need some comedy relief. You know,
why don't we have a girl boss with him?
Yeah. All the stuff they throw into things that's by people who never read the original work, or, you know, feel like they got to make it more like the standard of the time or standard of current day or whatever. It's like, I'd really like to see some of the things I've grown up reading. I'd rather see a anime attempt than, you know, a Netflix series. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Like a live action thing. Like Elric, you could do Moorcock or like Hawkmoon or Elric like this, and it would be stunning, I think.
Well, and you talked about, you know, a creature could just pop out at any time. Mm-hmm. with the way the manga of Berserk and the anime starts, this series of movies does not. It ejects this prologue, and it but those series start out with Guts. He is wandering by himself. He has one eye, and he is carrying a sword that is much larger than the one he has. And
oh, jeez.
And he has this brand on his neck. And this brand attracts demons to him. And so he is constantly fighting these horrific monsters that come after him every night. And
jeez.
Yeah, it's nuts. And you go, what happened? And
right.
He'll face it seems like he's looking for something, and he'll find these people who turn out to be like these really powerful demons, and he slays them and moves on. But he's basically, he befriends this, little elf named Puck, who's kind of his buddy. He's this little tiny elf, and he's kind of the audience surrogate who's kind of watching everything happen. And but we sort of go, Puck doesn't appear in the original anime, but he's in these movies and he's in the series, but, you go, what's going on? This is like a horror thing. And then it flashes back to, and it starts with Guts at that battle and fighting that guy and meeting Griffith and stuff like that. So it gives us this Golden Age arc is a flashback in the plot.
Right.
But it starts out with that stuff from Conan and stuff where there is this constant threat where it feels like this guy is just exhausted fighting monsters all the time.
Right, right.
And it'll be you'll get to a point in the manga where it's like, okay, Guts is getting to take a rest with like this nice family he met, and then they turn into monsters and try to kill him. one of them will get possessed by a demon or something. You know, it's just something crazy happens.
Right.
But so it definitely has that vibe. So, and I remember you said, so you started out saying you were hoping the Japanese could adapt that sort of fantasy. Did this scratch any of that itch for you at all?
Yeah. Beforehand, the most recent anime I've watched, because my kid got into I can't remember, it's popular on Netflix, it's some anime with these kids and basically like a orphanage, it's really like a farming system to feed demons. The Promised Neverland, I think that's what it is.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, he loves it, and so I watched all episodes with him, and then we started watching that Demon Slayer show or whatever, that's apparently had the number one movie about a month ago.
Oh, is it Demon X Demon or is it
it's Demon Slayer
Demon
or something.
Demon Slayer. Yeah, I think it's Demon. Demon Slayer.
Yeah. I don't know, they're like fighting vampires and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's Demon
Samurai.
Slayer. Yeah, you're right.
Yes, and there was like the movie version actually knocked off the new Mortal Kombat from the top five theaters about a month ago.
Deservedly,
like, it was the first time. Yes, it was the first time an anime film was like the number one movie in the country, which I thought was hilarious. And we watched the first couple of episodes of that, and it's interesting, but it didn't. Neither of those things. It still had that the big-eyed characters, the multicolored hair that they have, you know, kind of these things I don't necessarily understand or know. I'm sure anime experts could tell me.
It's a little too weeby for you.
Yeah, 1,000 words. I'm not into that style for adapting my kind of reading or whatever. But when I saw this is totally different. This is, I was like, okay, I could probably buy into these guys getting the rights to Moorcock or Howard or, you know, Fritz Leiber or, you know, Fafford and the Gray Mauser, however you say it, or whatever, those characters I used to read when I was a kid, and they could probably bring it to animated life in a pretty amazing way, I think. Just don't use that 3D photography so much.
Yeah, I think it's used way too much in this first movie. And actually, I'm going to say, I think the first film is the weakest of the three.
Okay.
But the first film is only like 70 minutes, like a little more, like 77, excuse me. The follow-ups are much longer. The second one is 98, and the third one is nearly 2 hours.
Were these straight to video in Japan, or were they theatrical?
That's a good question. I know, let's see, release. It doesn't say if it was theatrical or not. It just says it was released. But, you know, these I bought the day they hit shelves at the store because I was excited about a new Berserk thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually have no idea. I'll have to look into that. But this first film is much shorter. One of my biggest complaints with it, one, too much 3D with the battle scenes. And
yeah.
Two is I think it should have been a little bit longer because to kind of flesh out Guts and Griffith's relationship a little bit more, because that's something in the TV, in the original anime from 97, mm-hmm. that you spend a lot of time with those characters in that show. And so you really, what eventually transpires hits a lot harder. It hits hard here, but I think, you know, the way this film ends, it ends very abruptly. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I felt like it just cut off because it's like, okay, we want you to buy the next DTV release or whatever.
It is a cliffhanger, and the I'm going to spoil it a little bit, so just skip ahead a few seconds if you don't want to know. But it ends with Guts has just done something horrible for Griffith, done a monstrous thing, and then he eavesdrops on Griffith, and Griffith basically says, you know, I can't respect somebody who works for someone else. I need to, you know, you have to be on my level. And Guts is like kind of shattered by this because he's like, oh, I thought we were friends. You know, this guy just sees me as he's just using me. So this kind of sets in motion the events of the next movie.
So it totally disrupted their latent homosexual relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now we know how the cards are being played.
Yes. the movie just ends right there. Mm-hmm. And it's a little too sudden. It's too short, I think. There's some stuff we could have put in there to make it a little better. Do you agree with that? Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I felt like it was jumping ahead too much in certain aspects, and there's a lot of detail it didn't capture. Maybe it's in the manga. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say because it was like, because I'm kind of used to that scattershot storytelling with anime,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, especially DTV. But I figured they were glossing over stuff because they wanted to get some to the money shots. They wanted to get to the big points of the story that I guess the fans know or whatever.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I feel like there's a lot of episodes of the old show and a lot of chapters of the manga they skip in this movie. Whereas we go into much more detail, especially in the third film. I feel like the third film doesn't skip very much. It's pretty exhausted. In fact, it includes way more from the manga than the original anime show did.
Really?
Yeah, it goes way
now
more.
Is the original anime show, is that easily available, or is that
no.
kind of been,
it's kind
just
of
been 90s, 90s eyes to where all these things in the 90s are suddenly hard to get?
Yeah, it's not streaming anywhere.
We need a term for this. There is a frequent problem with movies from the 90s, particularly Hong Kong films, and a lot, I'm guessing now, Japanese anime, where this stuff is actually very hard to see.
Yeah, it is. I'm looking to see if it's not streaming anywhere. It says on Just Watch, mm-hmm. we couldn't find any streaming offers. The DVDs, I think, go for a pretty penny.
Yikes.
And so, you know, if you're going to watch it, you know, you might be visiting some sketchy websites, I guess.
Or haunting some dirty thrift stores.
Yeah.
So Arc Thrift Store might have some donation piles.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
It's got to be cheaper than the mangas, because it's not cheap to buy.
No, the big leather bound editions are like $50 a pop. But you can, I think you can get them for a little bit cheaper online, but. But that's the standard price. But I think it's one of Dark Horse's best-selling titles.
Probably. I could see why.
Because Dark Horse puts it out. And and when Mura died, they were impossible. It was really hard to find, like, the first four. They just disappeared everywhere because everybody was buying it up after Mura died. But they originally came out in these little pocket-sized manga editions. And there's a lot of those. There's even some Berserk novels that like go into backstory of certain characters and stuff like that.
They've had English translations?
Yep.
Like prose?
Yep.
Huh.
I've got one of them. I found one of them at Barnes & Noble the other day. The Flame Dragon Knight. And the person who wrote it is the person who wrote the scripts for the movie. Or some of the shows, I think. So.
Oh, okay.
So somebody, Mura.
So they didn't hire, like, Craig Shaw Gardner to rewrite this.
No, I think it's whoever.
Piers Anthony is going to write it.
Yeah, I think it's the person who wrote the follow-up shows to this. And Mura does illustrations for it. So, you know, there's illustrations every few pages.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some Berserk prose novels as well. There's even been some video games. I had one for the Dreamcast called Sword of Berserk, Guts Rage. And there's one called Berserk and the Band of the Hawk for PS4, which goes through a lot of the story. But and there's one for the PS2 that never came out here. But yeah, so it's been pretty popular and it's been very influential on like anime and video games. And if you look at a game series like Dark Souls, that was hugely inspired by Berserk, very popular game series. But its influence is pretty wide ranging, and like I saw a lot of stuff on Twitter, people mourning Kentaro Miura when he died.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think you're gonna watch further into this, John?
Yeah, I'll at least watch the next two movies, which are on Netflix, and I guess I'll consider the HBO Max series.
Give it a shot. Watch the first. Yeah. Like, I thought the third episode. is really wild.
Okay.
Let me just put it that way. I watched it late at night and I was and it's one of those it's one of those stories that keeps moving and doesn't stop, and every time you think it's over it gets worse and worse and worse. And it's like a horror episode. It's like a haunted house movie or something. It was very bizarre.
Interesting.
But
I didn't know it was possible for them to kind of get this type of dark violence. And, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of violent anime, but at the motion that they're doing it at, it's definitely unique.
Yeah, no. So I'd say give it a shot. I'd say like, if you don't like it by like the third episode, just stop, you know, but that was a crazy episode of that show.
Right.
And there's two seasons, so there's like two follow-up series, two plot arcs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But you know, the manga...
You don't recommend trying to collect, you know, getting a second mortgage on my house and collecting the manga and reading it first. Yeah.
I don't know what would be cheaper, collecting the paperbacks or collecting the leather-bound ones, because the leather-bound ones pack a lot into them.
Yeah, because the little ones they're not exactly cheap.
No, and, they're not. I have one here, and it's $15.
Right.
And let's see. The one I'm looking at, volume 7, right here, and it contains 3 volumes. It's not as much as I would think. But since this series has been going from 1988, you'd think there'd be a lot more than there is. I think they collect 3 volumes. So if you're doing 30, so it's like 45 plus tax, it probably comes to around, maybe it's a little more expensive to collect the leather-bound ones.
Yeah.
Factoring in tax, it's probably break about even, but
they look like they take up a lot of space on your shelf.
Oh, they're huge. Yeah, they're definitely showpieces.
Now I was thinking like maybe they could do something like Frank Herbert's Dune.
Oh yeah, there's a Dune comic that came out, but it's Western, so I don't trust. American comics are just terrible now.
Oh, they're ghastly.
They're unreadable.
No offense to my friends who are struggling in that industry right now. I might be listening, but even they know that whole industry's in trouble.
Yeah, mangas. Oh, go ahead. I was just gonna say I'm not talking.
Oh yeah,
about
I was about to
Mike
say
Barons.
Manga's kicking its ass. And manga's totally killing it.
Oh, breaking news! Jim Steranko just told me what his favorite Tarzan movie is.
Oh really?
Yeah, he says, "Hey Archbishop." My favorite Tarzan film, maybe the Green Goddess serial with Herman Brix, aka Bruce Bennett, who was also in Treasure of the Sierra Madre, just happened to be a real life Olympic champion.
Yeah, interesting choice because that was produced by Burroughs.
In a Phoenix bistro some years ago, I happened to notice a guy sitting next to me, Johnny Weissmuller, another gold medal Olympic champ, and challenged him to do the Tarzan yell as a command performance just for me. And I said I'd pick up his bar tab for the favor. He did it. I was asking him because he's doing his little TNT thing tonight on Sunday nights right. So I asked him that before the show, before we got started. I said, "What's your favorite Tarzan movie?"
I'd like to see a good edition of Tarzan and the Green Goddess. The problem is, I think TCM showed a remastered version of the serial, but it's not available on DVD anywhere.
No, you can watch like kind of a dodgy versions on YouTube and
they're
Prime.
All over. There's Roku channels devoted to it, but the prints are, you know, they're old 16 millimeters that have just been beaten to hell.
Anyway, so sorry, I just saw that and I was like,
Tarzan emergency.
I looked at my Twitter feed and I just noticed my mentions had a lot of stuff in them. So I went, Steranko must have replied. but I can't remember what I was talking about.
We're talking about how manga's killing the American comic book.
Oh, so. Yeah. I'm not talking about like the Mike Barons and our, you know, people who do good work. You know, there are lots of people who do great work. It's just, in general, the state of that of the comics industry in America is pretty weak.
It's dire. It's very bad.
I was
starting to read Dune again last night to prep for the disappointing movie that's opening this fall. And
you don't think that's going to be a huge bomb?
You know, you could do it so differently. Why make it look exactly like the Lynch version? I don't mind the Lynch version at all, but they could do better, and they can make it look better, and they just do a reboot. It's the same. It looks like they just got the same costumes from De Laurentiis or something.
I completely agree. No, there were even YouTube videos doing side-by-sides showing how the shots are almost exactly the same, and I'm sure it's going to have that kind of more long navel-gazely Denis Villeneuve style, but
yeah, but it's just reading and I'm like, this would be better as like an animated thing, like the Berserk thing I just watched. And you know, just cause I'm just reading a few chapters at night. I'm not doing a deep dive into reading it furiously. Cause I don't think Herbert's prose is it's not done in a compelling way where you can't put the book down. I'll put it that way.
I can read like a chapter. They're really short and I'm done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was intended. This is the funny thing. Dune was actually like a young adult novel.
I can see that.
It is. I mean, you read it. The style is not that complex. It's easier to read than Asimov and stuff happens, but it's really a young adult novel. Paul Atreides is a young guy and, you know, his mother is raising him to be this, super killer
he's the chosen one, you know?
right it's a young adult novel. It's the same way Ender's Game is and all that, but people don't realize that these are young adult reads.
I think it's
Burroughs stuff is young adult, you know?
Absolutely, the Burroughs stuff is for boys.
Yeah, Weird Tales is for boys. Doc Savage is for boys.
Oh, but Doc Savage big time is for kids, you know?
Yes, it's for kids. It's just compared to today's writing, it's like overtly intellectual because writing today is so bad
it's
flat.
No, it
TV
seems
inspired.
A lot of the stuff gets elevated to high art because, you know, the landscape seems increasingly dire. And so you go, you know, this stuff is actually great literature, even though it's, you know, kind of populist entertainment.
Right. Jack Reacher, the finest suspense novels ever written. They could be, they'd be better if they were 180 pages, like a Destroyer novel, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing about Jack Reacher is, you know, I saw the first movie and I went, man, this would have been, it would have been perfect if like Clint Eastwood in the 70s was playing him or something.
Yeah, great.
I'm sure I've said that 100 times already on the show, but it bears repeating. But yeah, no, I think I've recently just been getting back into Berserk and reading the comics and stuff. And, you know, it's way more detailed and exciting. And I was going, man, this is, you know, fun, violent action, dark fantasy, that, you know, I'm not getting anywhere else, you know?
Right, right. It's a sword and sorcery fix, basically. Yeah.
And everything in Berserk is like a big struggle.
You know, right.
Like, oh, increasingly so. Everything seems dire and like it all seems like it's all over. And, you know, they'll snatch victory from the jaws of defeat only to find like an even worse situation around the corner. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's one of those shows where, or stories where you think you've won and you haven't. And I think a lot of fans are real upset that they're not going to get to see how it ends. And one thing I was going to say earlier was that you would think that there'd be a lot more content because it's a comic it's a manga that's been going since 88. But I think Mura would take like, you know, 9 month sabbaticals here and there.
Right. Right. So he wasn't farming it out, because what a lot of manga creators would do is they would farm out their work so it could keep going.
Yeah, and, well, that's what Toriyama's done with Dragon Ball. He doesn't do any.
Yeah, they
do
it with Dragon Ball. They do it with a lot of the big franchises. I think Lupin the Third, Golgo 13, a lot of ones I'm familiar with. They have like a workshop of artists trained to draw just like the creator. Well,
and I think Mura did have assistants and a studio, but I think he was heading up everything, because, you know, it didn't go every single month. You know, there would be long breaks.
I think it's his point of view, and he understands the genre a lot better than, you know, I'm gonna be mean to the Yanks again, but American creators they tend to see it as Dungeons and Dragons. Like, oh, they're on a quest or whatever. Like, they really, that's how they blew the Conan films, you know, it's this quest, and no, it isn't. It's not revenge. It's not any of this stuff. It's, the world is dark and dangerous and effed up, and, you know, and this character is fighting to live. He's living to survive or surviving to live. You know, it's an approach that other mediums, when they handle it, they don't get it. Mm-hmm. They just don't understand that this is the point of view that it's coming from. That's where, you know, I think Mura gets it, and where a lot of guys didn't. Dino De Laurentiis and John Milius didn't get it, you know.
Yeah, that was another case with Conan the Barbarian of, oh, I want to throw these things in because I'm not going to get to do them later. Like, I want to do a movie about Genghis Khan. Well, I'm not going to get to do a movie about Genghis Khan, but I'm doing a movie about Conan so I can put Genghis Khan type crap in it. You know, they foist all this other crap in there that they want to do without staying true to what was written.
Even repeat the ending of Apocalypse Now. He did.
Yeah,
he just
cuts
his head off, just like Martin Sheen did the Brando.
I never thought about that, but you're right.
The same damn ending. What the hell?
And it's like at a temple, too.
Yeah. What the hell? All you need is
that.
A calf being slaughtered, or buffalo being slaughtered, and, you know. So it's the same damn ending.
Oh, my gosh. That's too funny. Yeah.
And people wonder why I hate on that film so much.
Yeah. I think they assume it's something you'd like.
Yeah. And it's just like, no, I don't. Because I read the stories. That's not Conan. You know, that's Schwarzenegger. I mean, who I'm not a big fan of. Really not a fan at all.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like me, John.
Yeah,
why is that?
I sincerely think it was the studios were trolling us, making him a star.
Why? I am a big, strong man. I was Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, now
why don't
now
you
he's
think?
Like a, He's the fake vegan.
You don't like to drive a Prius and eat Impossible Burgers with you, a girly man.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you watch that video of him showing off his fridge to, like, Men's Health or whoever the videographer is. So he's a vegan diet and I eat the vegan food. And I said, so what do you like to cook? Oh, I like to cook a steak. And it's just like, what? Why?
What?
Anybody listens to this fraud for 5 minutes?
Come on, you know, I want to eat the steak, you know. I want you to live in the pod and eat the bugs, but I get to eat the cows. More,
you know,
cows
damn
for me.
Well, if they pitch this as a movie project to Hollywood, Berserk, give us a live-action film, they're going to give it to Schwarzenegger and Paul Verhoeven.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they'll give it the guarantee it'll never be made. You know,
I gotta tell you, the second, I don't know if it's the first or the second Berserk movie, but it has something I've only ever seen in a Paul Verhoeven movie, and that's catapulting disease dead animals into castles.
Oh, Flesh and Blood, which they really did, supposedly.
Yeah, that was a real thing.
Yeah.
But that you see that in one of the Berserk movies, they're catapulting animals into the...
Yeah, and I would say the reason you got that in Flesh and Blood, and probably the reason you got it from in Berserk, is because these are not Hollywood based things.
Yeah,
you know, this is not made through the standards of a Hollywood studio. It
Where they
is
go,
before
do we really need to show that people our test
right.
our audience testing shows that people like cows. They don't want to see you get catapulted.
They don't want to see an innocent cow being flung about. They want them spinning through the air and mooing like in Twister.
Nothing like a stroll through cattle country.
Right. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Troy McClure. I love that Simpsons skit where they do the meat PSA. My friend says eating meat is wrong. Is he crazy? No, just ignorant. Your friend's never heard of the food chain. It just has all these animals with arrows pointing to people.
I gotta find out what episode that is.
Just
my son.
Type
He's
in
been...
like meat and you or something, or
Simpsons meat and you.
Yeah.
Troy McClure. Because my son's been watching The Simpsons on Disney Plus. And although I think they vaporized, they still haven't uploaded Razor Fist's favorite episode.
Oh, the Michael Jackson one?
Yeah, apparently that one, MIA.
Yeah, I heard that one has been shadowed, has been vaporized.
And I think that was done back when he was still in court, when he's still alive.
Really? Because like, I remember hearing...
It seems like I heard about it getting pulled years ago.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I saw it in the news when it was on Disney Plus. People noticed it was gone, but it could have been just somebody noticed and started writing about it on some site.
Yeah.
You know,
you never know when this stuff starts. Like, when it started, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when these people fall, you know, when these people do something or they get canceled or, like Bill Cosby, you know, the Cosby Show, totally pulled from syndication.
Yeah.
And what drives me crazy about that, though, is that screws over everybody else who was getting royalties from that.
Yeah, I think it's really wrong to do that, even if he's a creep or whatever, or, you know, whatever anybody thinks about that
case.
I
mean, if nobody's watching it, that's one thing, but it's not like that show promotes anything that's bad. It's a pretty wholesome show.
No, it's a decent show for what it is. Mm-hmm. And with the most popular show of the 80s, from what I remember.
Yeah.
I mean, that ratings for that show... nowadays, these show creators would give their left nut for the type of ratings that show got. They get their left arm. Kidding. They give their right arm too. I mean, they buy robot arms. that friggin' show got. But
they'll get the Jax arms.
Well, it's like I Spy hasn't been pulled from anything.
That's because you know, and I think it's because there's no consistency. You know, the Cosby Show, it's got his name, but I Spy, most of these idiots who run these things don't even know he's in it, you know.
Right.
They probably,
you know, it was just a big deal when he was in it. Like I think it was banned in Mississippi or something when it was being broadcast.
It's because all you Mississippi people are racist. That's
apparently,
why.
You know, the irony is that the station that I think banned it or allegedly banned it or whatever, they ended up being black owned, I believe.
What?
I think it was funny. WLBT in Jackson. I think it was actually, it became a black owned station and black owned NBC station. It ran Sanford and Son like four times a day. Hence my love for the sitcom Sanford
and
Son.
Yeah. It's I mean, doesn't Mississippi have the highest black population in the country?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Like, it's like 50%, 60%, something.
It's a
like
lot.
That.
You know?
So I always laugh when these smart aleck, like Cato Institute woke libertarians or wokeitarians will say something like, "Ah, oh, the worst state is Mississippi." I'm like, "Why are you just saying that? Because they're all black?"
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly black state. Is that?
Do you have
that,
a problem with the majority of the population, yeah, sir?
Yeah, it's like you got an issue there.
Yeah. What exactly?
So whenever
are you
people
saying?
Put down Mississippi, or they say Mississippi stupid, or whatever, remember they're being racist.
Yes.
They may not realize that they're actually being racist. It's not, you know, it's not like Lil Abner down there. It's not at all.
Oh man.
It's like the Wire times 1,000. You know.
You gotta use these creative arguments. You know, when you're dealing.
Yeah,
with,
yeah. They're just hiding the racism.
When you're dealing with libertarians, this is what you need to do.
Oh God! Well, I'm specifying Cato Institute libertarians.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very specific breed you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I'm not talking about Dave Smith or those types. Of,
I'm not talking about. Like. I'm not talking about fat Dave Smith either.
That's my favorite Twitter account.
Yeah, Dave. Fat Dave Smith.
Cracks me up because I don't know where that guy's really coming from.
I don't know either.
I don't know if he hates Dave Smith and he's just doing this, or he likes Dave Smith, but he thinks he can make a more libertarian
I think he's a Legion of Skanks fan.
That's the
vibe I get, is that he's a Legion of Skanks fan.
Because I think Dave Smith's going to be the libertarian presidential candidate in the next election.
You think so? You think he can?
I think that's what he's going for. I think he'll do it. I think he can.
You know, because the leadership in that party is so pathetic.
It's horrible. I know, because I'm a member.
Well, the thing is, you know, Dave will have Spike Cohen on his show, and he'll go like, "Why didn't you? You know, you guys had a real opportunity to talk about how people's freedoms were taken away from them completely this past year," and Spike Cohen just sort of hems and haws at it. And I'm going,
"Yeah,
that would have been a real. If they wanted to siphon off votes, boy, that was a way they could have done it. And they chose to instead of that during COVID, they chose to talk about, like, you know, just the typical stupid libertarian talking points no one cares about that are totally loser talking points. You know,
yeah." Losertarians.
Was that Michael Medved?
No. Well, Michael Medved said it. And who's the other one? The guy who sounds like...
Mark Levin.
Yes, Mark Levin.
Losertarians.
He's become my favorite, like, AM radio conservative guy to imitate. I can never remember.
That's because
he speaks in a Hannity vibe. He has a Hannity inflection.
Is it because... what's his name? Is it because it's because Rush is dead? We all used to do Rush Bowl, the EIB network.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We used to do Rush Limbaugh. You know, Clinton had something to do with it, but now it's like he's dead. So now we have to. I guess Mark Levin is the next thing. I don't even know if Medved's still doing a radio show.
I don't know. Yeah, Michael Medved. Who knows? I don't know.
I think he's been banished. Seriously, I'm not even kidding. He's been banished to like graveyard time slots on most stations, like 2 a.m. Because I think I've come across him when I'm up at the wrong hour, and it's like, hella weird. And I'll encounter that, you know, it's like, and it's just like, he was always terrible. Like, I don't like his books. I don't like his reviewing style. I don't like him.
Ooh, he's looking rough. I'm looking at a picture of him right now. He didn't look so good.
Yeah. He's very neoconservative.
Oh, big time.
Liberal. I can't stand that type of Republican.
And he is the guy. He is responsible for creating the bad movie cult.
Yeah, he actually is. He and his brother.
The Golden Turkey Awards gave us it. We would not have like MST3K or anything like that if not for him.
Yeah, thanks, assholes. Now I got fatsos always talking in movies now.
But yeah, they created these cults around Plan 9 from Outer Space and Oh, just every, like, robot monster and all that stuff.
You know what they picked as one of the 50 worst films of a Hollywood Hall of Shame or whatever the hell? It was Blind Man, Tony Anthony.
Really?
It's like, what are you, nuts? I don't even think they saw it. I don't think they actually saw
they
it.
Also they also included King Kong, which was not bad at all.
Yeah, the 76 Kong. Yeah. Nuts. Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, which is a fun, psychedelic,
oh my gosh.
Movie.
That's one of my favorite Godzilla movies. I love it.
It's great. What the hell is he talking about?
No, it's just... And they'll attribute... Nerd. And, like, his book, he would attribute stuff to Hollywood that wasn't Hollywood.
You're right.
Oh, this is the worst Hollywood has to offer. This is like a flea pit production. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Pinocchio from Outer Space, a Japanese cartoon.
You think Jesse James meets Frankenstein is like, you know, that's RKO Pictures. Give me a break, you know?
Well, they called like one of the worst directors William Bodine, who was because he was one-shot Bodine, but he was an economical B-movie director. He made most of the Bowery Boys movies.
Yeah, he's the one
who did. He was great.
Jesse James meets Frankenstein's daughter.
Yeah. So what?
Who cares? There's a place.
It doesn't matter.
It's there's a you know a place for all that.
Yeah, I miss that market. I miss that market of different movies opening every week and closing by Thursday, 1 week only stuff. I miss that. I'm just a chance to see all sorts of different things. It's like we don't have that anymore.
Yeah, it looks like he's still going. It says he's syndicated out of Seattle. I guess they must play his stuff late at night or something.
I think he's on Salem Radio. I think Salem Radio pushed him to like 2 a.m. or something because I swear that's when I've encountered him. Like I'm driving late at night for whatever reason. You know, I was stupid enough to go to a midnight movie or something dumb like that.
He's still doing.
I hear him on there.
Oh, you want to? Let's get some of his latest movie reviews. He gave Cruella 1.5 stars. Probably accurate.
Hella weird.
He gave Army of the Dead 2. This is out of 4 stars, by the way. He gave Army of the Dead 2.5. He gave Those Who Wish...
So he enjoyed it.
Yeah. That's above average. That's like a 6 or a 7. Those Who Wish Me Dead, 2.5 stars. Spiral, the Saw movie, gets 2 stars. That's high for him for that kind of movie.
Ew, creepy film. Ew, very sadistic.
Creepy. The Outpost, 3.5 stars.
Because it's patriotic.
Yes.
Patriotic tribute to the great American troops.
Yes.
Which I'm not against, by the way.
I
wish we had more movies.
No, absolutely not making fun of that.
Honoring the troops.
It's just easy to ascertain what his take is going to be.
Exactly, because you know you're dead on with the take.
He gave Mortal Kombat 2 stars. Let's see. Judas and the Black Messiah, 3 stars. Let's see. I'm only picking movies I've heard of. I don't even know what this is.
Right.
Nobody, 2.5 stars. Godzilla versus Kong, 2 stars. Wonder Woman 1984, 1.5 stars, based.
Hall of Shame, Turkey Award.
Hall of Shame. Turkey Award. News of the World, 3.5 stars. Oof. Nope. I haven't seen it, but no thank you.
What is News of the World?
That's that Western with Tom Hanks that Paul Greengrass directed.
Oh, that looks so boring.
I go, Eric, are you going to watch that? He goes, I'm not watching that boomer crap.
Eric's right on the money there.
He gave Coming to America 2.5 stars.
He didn't want to look racist.
Yeah, I guess not.
That's his boomer take. Ooh, you know, that is.
Oh, Thomas Sowell, Common Sense in a Senseless World, 3.5 stars, baby.
Of course. I mean, Thomas Sowell is brilliant. I don't know if a documentary.
Oh, of course, but you know he's gonna give it like the highest mark.
Yeah, he's gonna screw it very high. Remember, I used to listen to Hugh Hewitt, and I quit listening to him even before he took certain stands. But remember that movie that had like the real Navy SEALs?
Yes.
Stars of an action movie. I can't remember the title.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but yeah. Was it, yeah. I forget. I'm not going to know the name.
Right, but Hugh Hewitt was promoting it on a show, probably because he knew the producers or they called him up or whatever. He's like, it should be a finalist for the Oscars. And when it came out, and I refused to see it, simply because I was reading all these online reviews from people more of my political stripe, say it's unwatchable. Walked out of the damn thing. Like, 10 minutes in. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And also like I had a free movie at Regal Cinemas that week for whatever reason, like built up points or something. And I still refused to go see the damn thing. But I remember like Hugh Hewitt and probably Medved were like praising that thing.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. And that's a problem with the conservative media is they'll tend to overpraise anything.
Yeah.
That mildly panders to them or is super pro-military or
and
whatever.
And by the way, the liberal media does that too. They play up all these piece of crap movies that film critics on Rotten Tomatoes, they are all rating the movie based on ideology. That's it.
Right, right.
You know, that's
a checkpoint. It's virtue signaling.
Yeah, that's all they do. It's funny because conservative media used to be completely, you know, they did it shamelessly. But for a while, the mainstream media, you could argue that they didn't do that. Now, no.
Right.
They're like shameless about it.
You used to be able to find the liberals that didn't like Michael Moore movies.
Yeah, you used to.
Not anymore. No.
Nomadland, 4 stars.
Yeah.
WandaVision, 2 stars, based. I'm going to say that's based. 2 stars. Sorry, Marvel. Monster Hunter, 2 stars. Michael, please. Please.
No.
It's at least 2.5. At least. Come on. Mank, 3 stars. Michael, please. That's a 1 star. Michael, what are you doing? Mank, that movie is garbage. Like, just warmed up. Oh, it's terrible. Hold on. The Lincoln is crying. The grifters, grafters, and governors of Illinois. I've never even heard of this, but it got 3 stars, so it must be pretty good.
It's probably something only shown at like 5 different churches or something in the Midwest. But you know, he sent him a copy and he praised it.
Yes, Dr. No, 1962.
Got it, not it too. 3 stars.
Uh-oh, Mel Gibson, Fat Man, 1 star. Sorry, Mel. Parasite, 2 stars. Sorry. Think you won Best Picture? Think again. Michael Medved thinks you're average.
The Oscars are hella weird.
Dr. No.
What was that book he wrote? Remember, he wrote that book. What do you give Dr. No?
2.5 stars.
What?
Too low. Sorry.
Wimp. I'm stuffing the Medveds into a locker.
Okay, look. Borat subsequent movie film, 2 stars. Michael, what are you doing? That's too high. What's
just give
happening?
It no stars.
Just give it no stars. That movie deserves nothing. Terrible. just embarrassing. War with Grandpa, 1.5 stars.
That movie stayed in theaters longer than any other De Niro film ever. You realize that?
It's a War with Grandpa. It's a sequel to Bad Grandpa.
I was going to take my kid to see it. I was good. The weekend I finally decided, oh, I'm going to take my son to see it. No, it's pulled. Finally, after half a year in theaters, it's pulled.
Okay. John, I want you to guess how many stars on the basis of sex got? On the basis, of sex.
Was that the Ginsberg movie?
Yes.
Ruth Bader? Okay. I'm going to say he gave it 2 stars.
3 stars.
What? Piece of shit. I didn't see it. Piece of shit.
Irresistible, the John Stewart directed film, 1.5 stars. Sorry, John. You're going in the Golden Turkey Awards.
Ah, John made too many funny expressions. Some quote he took out of context from Med.
Yeah, he made too many, put his hand up to his mouth and made that oopsie I farted face too many times.
Yeah. So glad that bastard's not in the media anymore. You notice he makes this comeback and nobody cares.
No, nobody cares. His nobody audience, cares.
I have a movie and I'm being real important, and nobody gives a shit.
His audience, honestly, is I think they're extremely angry with him, because anytime he pops up, I see people who used to watch his show go like, "Screw you, you," because they like they worshipped him. Like they looked to him. What am I supposed to think, John? Tell me.
Yeah.
And they would go and they would watch it. It was like a cult. You know, they would watch. There were these people who'd go to like every taping of the Daily Show. But anytime he pops up in an interview or on a show, they're like, screw you, John, you abandoned us, and you weren't here for us when Trump was here, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know,
like he would have prevented Trump's election.
Exactly. Like they think but there's just something they relied on him so much for their commentary. And he decided he's one of these people who Mike Malloy talks about this. People who aren't happy with where they are. Cause he had an audience. He had this show like that was, I don't know how well watched it was, but it was promoted heavily. And then he goes, I want to go be a filmmaker. I want to go be a director. I want to go be like Alan J. Pakula or something. And he's in this kind of boomer mindset of, is he boomer or Gen Xer? I don't know.
I think he's a boomer. He's a little older than me, so.
Yeah, he was like, oh, I want to go be like an important filmmaker. And this was in an age when, you know, newer movies just aren't as relevant as they used to be. And you're not going to make a political film that makes waves, you know. So,
right.
But anyway, I think I've gone...
I think he wanted to be like a Woody Allen. The Weinsteins probably blew smoke up his ass that he could be like a Woody Allen or something.
And, yeah.
And he believed it. And he probably didn't like, you know, basically reading the work of his staff of writers all the time. Right. I don't know. The moral of the story is you should never have an intellectual codependency with a TV host.
No. Oh, my gosh. Like, please take in information and you do some critical thinking for one, you know. Yeah. The thing about Stewart was he made his audience feel like they were smart. People like people right. make you feel like you're smart. And
pseudo-intellectualism at its worst.
Yes. Yes. And going back in Medved's catalog, I think that's about as far back as I'm going to go because there's a lot of there's a lot of reviewing old stuff for the... Oh, okay. Okay, wait. I have one here. John? I want you to guess, how many stars did Michael Medved give Hamilton on Disney Plus?
I'm going to make a wild guess and say 3 stars.
4 stars.
Ooh.
Perfect. Ooh, well, perfect. Yeah. This is cinema, John.
It's because he's pushing DR3.
And 1776, 4 stars.
Yeah, whatever. I ain't watching any of that shit. I'm not watching any of it.
Spike Lee's Bamboozled? Okay, actually, I'm going back. There's some good ones here. Bamboozled by Spike Lee. Guess how many stars?
2 stars.
2.5.
Oh.
Ooh, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
He likes it. Mikey, he likes it.
Well, that movie does have a good setup. It just becomes a really bad Damon Wayans performance no ending.
Spike Lee has great ideas and great scenes, but he doesn't know how to make like a coherent thing.
No.
Cause
he needs help. He needs either somebody else's screenplay or, like I like Son of Sam.
Son of Sam is great. That's a Summer of Sam.
Summer of
Sam
is terrific. I need to get that Kino Blu-ray. That's actually a great movie. Like James Ulroy had said, that's a Spike Lee movie he loves.
Yeah. I think it probably captures the '70s better than something like Boogie Nights, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't capture the punk rock scene very accurately.
No.
You're right. It does have a 70s vibe. It's creepy.
That sweaty, like sleazy, like everybody's
totally
screwing it, like just under the table, like. Ugh,
that movie gave me a queasy.
There's that scene where
I loved it, though.
Where Leguizamo and what's her name?
Sorvino.
Mira Sorvino go out to that club and they get involved.
Yeah,
in
they
go to
Plato's Retreat, right?
Oh yeah, and it like ruins their relationship. Oh, it's so just.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
Made my skin crawl. It's so gross.
Yeah, it's so scummy.
It's disgusting. Let's see, Tiger King, 3 stars. Okay. How many stars did he give The Hunt?
Which one is this?
That's the one where the like liberals are hunting
the
Naga.
Cartoony thing they did with the what's her name, Betty Gilpin or whatever.
Yes.
I'm gonna say he gave it 2 stars.
1.5.
Oh.
You're not gonna hunt my president, sir.
More crap from Hollyweird.
Hmm. Let's see.
Oh my gosh!
Okay, I haven't seen one of these. Cats. Cats. Mm,
one star.
0 stars.
Ah, I'm close. I'm always like, yeah, I'm always like a star off.
You're like in striking distance every time.
Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. What was that book he wrote about how Hollywood had become horrible or whatever? That,
not the Golden Turkey.
I'm
going
to look up on Amazon. Nah, this was long after all that. This is when he became like a moral majority type of guy.
He was trying to be like the conservative movie critic guy.
Yeah, yeah. He was really the first and really the only one to do that. Let's see. I'm doing the Michael Medved on search.
No, Christian Toto. He does that. That's his thing.
Oh, yeah. No, but I'm saying Michael was first like back in the 80s.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah. I thought you said the only one. I was like, oh, there's a few.
Yeah, but it's like, let's see. Whoa, whatever this book is that I can't remember the title of, it was something like Hollywood versus America. That's it.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I read it back in 93, and I think I was kind of laughing at it. But because he does the same thing politicians do, like Tipper Gore did, where they have the fake story of, oh, we went to see this movie, and we were horrified by the displays of sex and cannibalism and the cook, the thief, his wife, and her lover, which is rated NC-17, by the way, which I'm sure somebody like Michael, who was very involved in the watching the movie industry, would already know what that means. Yes. But yeah, they have that, oh, this is a terrifying thing, and why is it getting all these rave reviews? So it has
Think
about
of the
a
children.
Lot of... Yeah, it was also like he had this theory, like, well, there's all these... Hollywood is putting out all these R-rated movies. They don't make as much money as G-rated and PG-rated movies. It's this type of... It gave... Like, I'll run into a friend who might be a born-again type. We'll just be polite and say that. And they'll give me points, talking points, from this book. It's like, okay, after he has this book, then what? The Matrix makes over $100 million. And, you know, for a while, almost like everything was R-rated. It's like the book has a lot of contradictions, and he just doesn't seem to know as much about the reality of the industry and people who go see movies as he thinks he does. Now, of course, now, because the movie business is so screwed up, this book has no relevancy whatsoever.
No,
like, all the points are just laughable. But but he did a lot of those fake straw man stories that, you know, didn't really happen. Like, you know, like Tipper Gore says, my daughter brought home this Prince album and I was horrified at the song Darling Nikki with references to masturbation. It's like,
I went to go see The Omen in the theater. When the guy's head gets cut off, they were... That couple, they were in orgasmic ecstasy.
Like, Harlan Ellison's a liar.
Yeah, he's a liar. Medved's a liar. Tipper Gore's a liar. You know, it's just like, it's so ridiculous and stupid. And I don't know why they do this. And all, really, let's be honest, all three seem like they'd be too smart to do that sort of thing, but they do it, you know? And you can see right through that shit. It's such a dumb story. It's like, yeah, I'll chalk that down. Would never happen.
All right. Avengers Endgame. How many stars?
He gave it 3.
4.
Fuck! 4 stars for Avengers.
Always close only counts in hand grenades and horseshoes.
Oh, man.
Yeah. What do you get, Berserk? No stars.
No stars.
Cartoons should not have graphic violence.
No, sir.
No nudity either. This is so inappropriate for children.
Yeah, okay, that we could cut it off, but that was fun. Oh, wait a second. I just saw another one that blows my mind. Halloween, okay. The newest Halloween film. Guess how many stars?
He gave it 2.5 stars.
Oh, you're so close. 3 stars.
Damn! What an idiot! That movie's morally reprehensible and artistically reprehensible, too. It was reshot!
Yeah. Ugh. My goodness.
Hall of Shame. They had to reshoot the damn thing?
Anyway. So, yeah, we're pretty far off from Berserk. So you're going to watch the next Berserk movie.
Yes, yes, I will watch the next one. I'll probably watch the one after that. I don't know if I'm going to go to the series. I might cancel HBO Max by then because I think we're all itching to cancel HBO Max for various reasons. But we'll see. But if I do, I might give the series a shot. I feel like I'd rather go read the manga. So what I might have to do is put in a reserve at the library, which, by the way, it's a huge reserve list for the they have volume one. And it's like quite a list of holds. I think
really?
I'll be number 9 on the list.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that's going to die down. There's just a lot of interest right now because of Mira.
Right. Because he stepped on a rainbow at a fairly young age.
Yeah, yeah. No, but there's a lot of questions as to what's going to happen. Are his assistants going to try to carry it on? A lot of fans think it should just be left as it is.
I kind of agree with that. I take the Harlan Ellison approach.
Yeah.
Just stop. Don't do a Robert E. Howard and let, you know, other people, you know, express the characters.
I think that can sully the legacy, too.
Yeah, it can. Believe me, it can.
It's just so risky. But yeah, no. So Berserk. So what would you give Berserk out of 10, John?
Berserk, I'd give it a 7. It's piqued my interest.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was worried.
Okay, this is the best anime thing I've seen non-Lupin the Third related since I watched the Valerian and Laureline show on Crunchyroll, which was a French Japanese co-production adapting those Valerian comics that Luc Besson turned into a movie I loved but completely bankrupted his company.
It was a huge bomb, unfortunately,
but that's a very enjoyable anime too, and I still like the movie, but yeah, I enjoyed this. I don't care if it ever gets a live action version. I don't think that's necessary anymore, and I don't trust anybody with that type of work, and I hope that, you know, somehow, like I said earlier, some of my favorite literature, like even John Carter or Mars, wouldn't I love to see that done this way?
Yeah.
Rather than hoping for a big budgeted movie that people will pretend is terrible or sabotage. You know, I'd rather, it's better to express it in this sort of thing.
Absolutely. I give it a 6. I like it, but I think it kind of shrinks in comparison to the next two.
I'm looking forward to seeing them. I might step back my rating once I watch the next two and say, oh, well, these do it much better.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would have given it a 7, but then, you know, watching the other two, I was like, I was going, oh, man, these are so much better. That's why I was like, if you want to watch them, because they're really good.
See, because you're ahead of me on this game, so
yeah,
now
I know.
Questioning my rating already. So.
No, well, they don't, you know, ratings change. You know, I've given out ratings that I would definitely revise.
Oh god, Letterboxd is the most embarrassing. Wish I didn't rate stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, three years ago.
Yeah, there's stuff you go back and you go, why did I give that 4 stars? That movie's like 2.5.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I'm pretty tight with the 4-star and 5-star ratings on that site.
But yeah, no. So check out the other two. But these movies are on Netflix. So check them out. Don't watch them with the kids, please.
Right.
Protect the eyes and brains of your children. But yeah, let me know what you think when you watch them, because I'm interested to know. Because I like this dark fantasy stuff, and when it's done well, it's rare. But I think these are examples of it done well.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, is there anything we need to add, John?
I think all our listeners kind of know the drill these days. So
yeah,
and we do have some crossover appearances coming up, but I think we'll announce those when they're available.
Yeah, we do have some stuff coming up that'll be good. Stu is supposed to be returning soon, so if you've been missing Stu, he'll be back. At least as of recording.
Yes.
Who knows?
Well, we know so far. He's coming back.
Who knows? But anyway. All right, guys. Well, with that, I'm going to say adios.
Later.
Uh-huh. Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.